listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Children like Gustavo and Milena Constantinu Ali.
Watch out, your brother's there.
Their dads, George Constantinu and Farid Ali, are part of a fast-growing group of parents using surrogates, gay men.
Shake, earthquake.
I no longer feel that it's a unique story. I'm a father now, facing the same challenges as any other parent, gay or straight.
That's an excerpt from a recent New York Times video on surrogacy. It's really amazing. I think it was late in March. People were remembering this 1988 New Jersey Supreme Court decision where a surrogate mother, the surrogate herself, sued to have herself named the legal mother of the child she was caring for a couple. The court found in her favor, although eventually awarded joint custody and then sole custody to the father. But the mother in this case, the woman who the father was married to, is not the mother. The surrogate is. This is very confusing, although nowadays, as we hear from the New York Times video, it's considered a rather convenient and easy and legal way for couples who cannot, biologically cannot have children, same-sex couples, to come by children anyway. Joining us to talk about surrogacy on this Tuesday afternoon here on Issues Etc., Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris, founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. Jen taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she is author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd.
Apart from the issue of same-sex couples getting children by surrogacy, let's lay that aside for a moment. We'll come back to it quickly. Apart from that issue, do you still have concerns about the surrogacy arrangements?
Well, I do have very serious concerns about surrogacy in general, Todd, because what you're doing is separating sex from procreation, and you're separating the person of the parent into two categories. You're saying there's a biological person, and then there's the person who actually takes care of you, and maybe there's another person who's the legal parent who has legal rights. You know, you're chopping the reality of motherhood or the reality of fatherhood, you're chopping those things up into their parts, into their components, and you're compartmentalizing the self. We're really alienating ourselves as we do that. And so I have issues about it from really the perspective of every single party involved. I think there are serious issues from the child's point of view, which is that I think it's an issue of justice to children that they have a mother and a father, and that they be connected to their mother and their father, the two people who brought them into being. And all of these other arrangements that we're doing are basically for adult convenience or for adult preference in some way, and they're not really taking seriously the question of whether, in fact, child has any actual rights or entitlements, whether there is such a thing as generational justice. And I believe there is such a thing as generational justice. I believe it's a structural injustice to deliberately separate a child from their biological parent unless you've got a really good reason. And just wanting to do so is not a really good reason. You know, people die, people become mentally ill, people have different reasons why they can't take care of their own biological children. I understand that, and we have ways to deal with those exceptional situations. But to proactively create motherless children or fatherless children as surrogacy and other donor-conceived technologies do, to me, that is a structural injustice to the child, and the government should have no part of facilitating that.
So it sounds as though what you're saying here is even if the biological mother, in this case it would be the surrogate.
Yes.
Even if the surrogate mother says, unlike the case of Baby M from back in the New Jersey Supreme Court in 1988, the mother did assert her maternal rights to be legally named the mother. Even if the mother says, no, I'll carry your baby and I make no claim on this baby, promise to never make any claim on this baby. Even if the mother says, no, the child still has the right, in your mind, to have a biological mother.
Well, that's right. That's right. In other words, the the reality of motherhood is not something that you can actually alienate yourself from. You know, you can't alienate that responsibility. You can't alienate that reality. Okay, and so legally, we're trying to do that. I get that. I get that the law is trying to do that. I get that people want to do that. But I'm saying from the child's point of view, you can't really do that. that's really bogus. And for us to create a society where the only thing that matters is adults and what they want seems to me to be a very dangerous path to be going down. And the people who are doing this, you know, they look like nice people and they surely have good intentions and all of that. But the fact is, when you put a legal structure into place, it can be used by anybody, and it will be used by all kinds of people. And we're not taking full account of that reality, which is just a reality of any kind of legal system. And so we're setting ourselves up for far greater problems down the road, in my opinion.
How would you draw the line between surrogacy, where a biological mother makes a legal arrangement with a couple to carry the baby for them, and then surrender the baby to them, from adoption?
Well, there are a couple points here. First of all, there's two different types of surrogacy. I think the type you're talking about is what is called so-called traditional surrogacy, where the woman uses her own egg. The surrogate mother uses her own egg, and then she gets the sperm from the man who wants to act as the child's father. So basically, what she's done is she sold the baby. You know, she's agreed to take somebody's sperm and then alienate her baby from herself, gestate that baby from that guy, turn it over to him in exchange for money, and hope for the best. You know, hope that the two of them are going to do a good job. Hope that the two of them are going to love the baby and take care of the baby, and so on. So now, how that differs from adoption is in two ways. First of all, in adoption, the child isn't brought into being simply for the purpose of being given up for adoption, right? Usually when a mother gives a baby up for adoption, something has happened that has made her not want to take care of the baby herself, or make her unable to take care of the baby herself. And typically, the person she gives the baby to take care of is not the child's father, right? If it's the child's father, basically, there's no adoption, there's no surrogacy. It's the father taking care of his own baby, you know, and no changes and no money changes hands in that process. Just he's the father, she's the mother. She relinquishes her parental rights, and he has sole parental rights to that child. If he marries somebody else or does something else, that's a different story. But the point is, he doesn't pay her to do that. They didn't have the baby for the purpose of her selling the baby, right? And so the question is whether it's a reactive institution, which adoption basically is reactive, or whether it's proactive. That is, you're becoming pregnant for the purpose of selling the baby. And incidentally, Todd, in most states, there's a lot of regulation, and for good reason, on the question of whether or not an adoptive parent can pay the mother for the baby. And most states say, no, you can't pay her anything. You can pay her medical bills, maybe, you know. In other words, if you make an arrangement with a birth mother, and, you know, if you and your wife were to make an arrangement with a birth mother and say, we'd like to take care of your baby when the baby's born, would you be willing to let us adopt the baby? And she says, I pick you of all the possible people I could pick to become the adoptive parents of my children. You can't pay her, you can't sweeten the deal by giving her an extra $20,000 or something. You're allowed to pay for her medical expenses, and that's that. Why? Because we don't want to sell the baby. We don't want the mother thinking about selling the baby. We don't want the prospective parents thinking about how much they can offer. We don't want people bidding on babies. We don't want that to become a commercialized transaction. And that's the reason that so many of the different regulations exist surrounding adoption, is to prevent that from happening, you know, so that every child can be loved into existence and taken for who they are, which is as a gift from God. And if for some reason you can't take care of your own baby, that your next step is also a gifting kind of step rather than a commercial transaction. That's what it's all about. And that's what surrogacy breaks down. Surrogacy turns it from being a gift from God into a commodity that is manufactured and purchased by the intended parents. And, you know, it's a kind of follow-on to our whole culture of choice that we have, we've gotten ourselves into the position where we think that a baby is a choice, and so therefore it's a problem to get rid of if you don't want the baby, and it's an object to acquire if you do want the baby. And that's just the wrong way to look at our fellow human beings. I don't care how small they are. We shouldn't be looking at our fellow human beings in that way.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she is author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. You'll find a link to the website and the blog of the Ruth Institute under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Jennifer, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back, Robert Spencer is going to join us. We're going to talk a little bit about a review that has been ordered by UK Prime Minister David Cameron of the Muslim Brotherhood. Robert Spencer is director of Jihad Watch. Then in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., our review of Episode 4 of the TV series Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey. Have you wondered what classical Lutheran education is all about? Are you a Lutheran homeschooler, pastor, or teacher? Would you like to be equipped to teach more effectively? Join the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education July 15th through the 17th at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Find the conference schedule recently posted at ccle.org. Discover the education that is our Lutheran heritage, ccle.org.
Folks attending last year's Making the Case conference absolutely loved the barbecue from Randy's House of Barbecue in Troy and Highland, Illinois. The pork, chicken, ribs, and beef are prepared just like the old days in a pit cooked over hickory, apple, and wild cherry wood. Randy's House of Barbecue, Route 40 and Troy O'Fallon Road in Troy, and at 2649 Northtown Way in Highland. Randy's House of Barbecue, randysbbq.com.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues, Etc. journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues, Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues, Etc. journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues, Etc.
T-shirts, shorts, sun. Get in shape this spring at Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois. Arch Fitness offers adult boot camps on weekday evenings and on weekday and Saturday mornings. For more information, check out the Facebook fan page for Arch Fitness or call Kevin Reisick at 618-670-6952. Arch Fitness is located at 127 West MacArthur Drive in Cottage Hills, Illinois. Get A-Fit this spring at Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois.